This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm so glad you decided to spend the next hour with me. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. Before I introduce my guest for today's show, I want to invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and download our free ebook, Overcoming Portion Distortion. It's packed with quick and easy ideas for making any mealtime fun and healthy. So get your copy today at eatgreatlivewellradio.com. We've got a really exciting show for you today, so I'm glad you're here with us. So grab a pen and paper and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. My guest today is Dr. Michelle Seibel. Each day, 6,000 women enter menopause. That's 2 million women each year. But what is menopause, and how is it impacted by your diet and nutrition? When does it happen? And what should you know about estrogen that will change your life forever? Today we're going to talk about and answer these and many other questions. Dr. Seibel was a member of the Harvard Faculty of Medicine for nearly 20 years, and he's currently a professor of OBGYN at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's the editor of My Menopause Magazine and has been the recipient of the Media Award for the North American Menopause Society. Dr. Seibel helps women 40 to 65, which I know is many of you, make sense of changes in their bodies, take control of their lives, and feel good about themselves. Every woman will experience menopause at some point, and I'm so excited to have Dr. Seibel here to share his experience with us today. Welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today and learn about this. I know I talk to women daily who are going through hot flashes and just going through a lot of the physical changes, and I know eating and some of the choices that we make really impact that. But before we start with that, I'd like to ask you, Dr. Seibel, to tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and what led you to focus on menopause.
Well, the idea of focusing on menopause comes from several different directions. One is the fact that women make about 85% of all of the healthcare decisions in the country. And they are so busy. Women are such nurturers. They're often nurturing their kids. They're nurturing their partners. They're taking care of their parents. They've got their jobs. They're out in the community. They're doing all of these things. And often they don't take time to nurture themselves. And the thing is that at this point in life, between 40 and 65, women have the opportunity to greatly impact their own quality of life. And in doing so, they have the opportunity to impact their family and all those they love and care about. So my feeling is we can make an impact on America's healthcare one family at a time, as long as the women get the information they need, because women are good about doing something when they have information. Men are more, they like to hear about it, but they don't do anything about it. Women will act on information, so I want to provide women as much information as I can.
I love that. And we have so many conversations. Each week we've been talking about our health and our families, and women don't take the time that they need to take care of themselves. They take care of everyone else, but what we're really trying to get them to realize is if they don't take care of themselves, they're not going to be here and have the health that they need to be able to take care of everyone else.
Well, right. You know, when you're on the airplane, and they always talk about this at every takeoff, in the event of an emergency and the oxygen mask comes down, make sure and put the oxygen mask on yourself first before assisting those surrounding you, you know. So the thing is, take care of your own self, and you're going to be then in a position to take care of your kids, your partner, your parents, and all the other things that women do on a day-in and day-out basis. So I want to be part of the solution to that.
That's a great reminder, and I love those visuals. So I'm going to ask, you know, everyone to remember that visual of those masks coming down. Put yours on first, and then you have exactly what you need to take care of everyone else.
Exactly.
I'd like to ask our guests, what motivates them to live healthy and to share their message about healthy living with others? We mm-hmm. call it your big why. So what is your big why, and how has it motivated you?
Well, my decision to go in health education really started when I was in my residency. I had gone through medical school, and I was in the year between the third and the fourth year of my residency training, the post-medical school training, when I was going to be a gynecologist. I was like 1 year away from finishing. And I had gone in to shave one morning, like I did every day, to go to work. And when I did, I looked in the mirror, and I noticed a huge bulge in the left side of my neck. I said, what the heck is that? And, you know, being a medical doctor, I did the only logical thing. You know, I pushed on it to see if it would go away, but it didn't, believe me. And the next thing I know, I was making an appointment with the head of the ear, nose, and throat department at that time. I was at Emory University in Atlanta, and I went to see the head of the ear, nose, and throat department. And he looked at me, and he said, you know, we're going to have to do a biopsy. I said, biopsy? I said, do you think it could be cancer? And he said, I don't know. We're going to have to do a biopsy. So, you know, very shortly, I was admitted to the hospital for a biopsy, and it turned out that it was a very, very rare benign tumor of one of the nerves of my neck. When I was an infant, I had been radiated for an enlarged thymus, which actually is a variation of normal, but the radiation caused this tumor. And it turned out that at the time, there was only about 63 reported cases in the world literature. So the surgeon came into my room, and he said, you know, you're lucky, it's benign, but the thing is that the people who have these kinds of tumors end up being on the tumors of speech. So there's about a 2 out of 3 chance that you will not be able to speak when you wake up from the operation. So I was pretty afraid for all of that. And I went to sleep for the operation, the second operation, which was much bigger, not knowing what was going to be the case. And to make a long story very short, it turned out that I did have this benign growth that was located on a nerve other than speech. And, you know, my voice was spared. And I decided that my voice had been spared for a reason. And I was a women's health expert, or a budding one at that time, and I decided that I would use my voice to educate women on what they could do to stay well, that it was for me like an omen. And I've been very involved in patient education things my entire career.
That's really interesting. I can't, as you were telling that story, I can't even imagine going to sleep and getting ready to go in for surgery, knowing that the odds are so, you know, against you, you know, coming out and being able to speak. I mean, just even thinking about, you know, what you must have been going through, just going, you know, doing that.
Well, it was very scary. And the person that was my colleague, my cohort, the resident who was on the surgery department, came in, and he just basically scared the holy moly out of me, because he said, I just can't imagine anything good it can be, and I hope you don't just have to take out your jaw and the angle of your jaw and your, you know, the corner of your neck and everything, your tongue, and just go the whole 9 yards. So he made it even worse. And I realized from that that if you told people the right information in ways that they could understand it, it could make a huge difference in their ability to function and respond to that information and then to take action that could be life-affecting. So that's really, it was a huge motivational situation that I have incorporated into my approach towards healthcare.
That's interesting the way you say that, and it sounds like that's a lot of your motivation to make sure people do get the right information. And I think
Absolutely.
Sometimes when people go to doctors, they get pieces of information or they get it in such a complicated way that they don't know how to make the right decision or what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I hear from a lot of people, they go to the doctor and the doctor says, you need to lose weight or you need to get your blood pressure under control, and they might give them medicine, but they don't really tell them the steps that they need to take to get healthy or to eat better. And I love when you give them the information so that they can really take the right action. They know what they can do and take control of it.
Right. You have to provide people with information and stepwise. I mean, you have to give people bites they can swallow. Otherwise, people choke on too much information. So you've got to just give simple bites, simple steps, break it down into parts. And, you know, that's the old story about how do you eat a 2,000-pound, you know, elephant? Well, one bite at a time. So you've got to take everything and break it down. And if that happens and people understand where they're trying to get to and they're on board, as I've said, they will likely come along with you and they'll be successful. You also empower women with the opportunity for success, because if it's overwhelming and you can't even start, how can you be successful? But if the first journey is just one step, then everybody can do it and they can move forward towards their ultimate goals.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we teach through our Eat Great, Live Well program is take one step each week, take, you know, one small piece and make one small shift. And at the end of 52 weeks, at the end of that year, you're going to make a huge transformation in your health. The year is going to go by whether you make any change or not. And it
that's
really
for
helps.
Sure.
So it's not so complicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good advice.
I wish there were more doctors out there that actually followed what you are talking about and really giving people the information they need in a way that they can make a difference.
Well, there's more of that going on, but that's why I put so much effort into my online education and my menopause magazine and other vehicles like that, because it allows women to take the information and use what they want and benefit from it. I mean, that's the whole thing. The thing you have to do is to continue to get educated and to continue to be curious about what you can do to make things better, because there's a lot that you can do to make a difference. And it's all about understanding what you want to achieve, defining what your problems are, and then breaking down into steps how it is that you can get there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to take a really short break, and when we come back, I want to start our conversation with having you explain what menopause is and how is that different from perimenopause.
Okay.
This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com. That's managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back, and we're talking today with Dr. Mace Seibel, and we're talking about women's health, and I'm really excited. Dr. Seibel, I'd like to ask you if you could explain what menopause is and how is that different from perimenopause?
Well, menopause is defined as 1 year after a woman's last menstrual period. That's natural menopause. And so if a woman goes through the reproductive years and then starts to have some transition in her menstrual cycle and other symptoms that go along with it, and finally she gets to her last menstrual period, 1 year after that is called menopause. Now that's natural menopause, but if a woman, and the average age of that, the mean age of that is age 51. So in America, most women go through menopause at about age 51, although the range is from about age 40 to age 55. And in fact, about 10% of women go through menopause before they are 45. So a lot of women go through much younger than they understand. Now, if a woman has her ovaries removed during her menstruating years, no matter how old she is, she goes into menopause. That's surgical menopause. Doesn't matter if her uterus is in or out. It doesn't matter if she has periods or she doesn't. If her ovaries are removed, that constitutes surgical menopause if the ovaries are removed during the menstruating years. So if you're 70 and your ovaries are out, that's not throwing you into menopause. But if you're 30 and your ovaries are taken out, that throws you into menopause. Now, perimenopause is like the perimeter or that time around. So perimenopause is that 10-year window that leads up to menopause when hormones are not exactly as paired together as they once were, and where instead of being synchronized like two figure skaters, the hormones start to get dissociated from each other. They just start to go on their own separate journeys, and that leads the sudden ups and downs of hormones and all the symptoms that come with it, the hot flashes, the palpitations, the brain fog, and so forth. And that is what perimenopause is. And like I mentioned, it can be a 10-year window. So if you're one of the 10% of women who goes into menopause at age 45 or 44, and you start that journey up to 10 years before, you could be going into menopause, and the symptoms that lead up to it could be present as early as age 34. So I actually have a very simple quiz that people can take. It's called Free Menopause Quiz. It's a one minute quiz, freemenopausequiz.com, and you can find out if you're more likely in perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's a simple 1 minute quiz you can take.
That's really interesting. So they can have it. It can be it sounds like a fairly long range where it can start. Mm-hmm. So does everyone experience menopause at the same point in their life? Is it something that just shifts in their body, or is each woman unique in how it happens?
You know, if you knew the day you were going to go into menopause, somehow in the future you knew that day, and you could line women up with each other from the day they were going to go into menopause and then move backwards. And in other words, align them from the point of menopause backwards, then the women would have amazingly similar experiences at similar times. But they don't. They're going through these changes. Their ultimate time of menopause may go as late in some women, rarely, as age 60. And occasionally it'll be before age 40. So if you move it back 8 to 10 years before that, they don't line up because you've got all this random beginnings, you know, that don't coincide. But if you could take it from the same point backwards, it would line up.
Interesting. Do the symptoms come on suddenly? I know hot flashes, women talk about that because it's something that they're really aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But are women aware of those other changes, or could they be more aware that they're going through this if they listen to their body?
Oh, I think they could. But, you know, no one wants to think they're getting older, and older is what menopause has been identified as, even though it's just a natural transition like puberty was. And just like the hormones in puberty go from completely chaotic before puberty into this incredibly synchronized experience so that every month a woman's lining prepares to receive an egg and the egg is released at the right time. And if it doesn't get fertilized, the lining sheds. And this cycle goes on and on for the 35 years or so of her reproductive years. As she approaches menopause, all of that goes into like puberty, but backwards. The same kind of synchrony moves into dyssynchrony and chaotic kind of random individual blood levels that cause all the symptoms. So if you started at the head and worked your way down, you would start to see the brain fog and the hot flashes and the dry skin and maybe an overrepresentation of thyroid disease and heart palpitations and the hot sweats that go on and changes in bladder and vaginal dryness and a whole host of other things, irregular periods, which are incredibly common and one of the hallmarks. So all of these things could be going on. And a lot of women will go in and they start having these palpitations and they have a hot flash coming and their heart rate may go up by 12 to 18 beats a minute. And then they think they're having a heart problem. So they see a cardiologist. Or they can't remember. I mean, they're totally competent women who are running companies or taking care of their households or they're doing all kinds of things. And then they juggling the kids and the laundry and the carpools and everything else, and then they can't remember where the car keys are, and it makes them think they're losing their mind, and they're worried about it, and maybe they have an aunt or a mother who went through dementia early. Now they're really nervous, and so they go and see a psychiatrist for that, or maybe their mood changes or their libido changes, and they're noticing things aren't exactly right. All of these things can be symptoms of perimenopause and can be addressed individually under one umbrella instead of five different doctors for five different symptoms.
So how do you find a good doctor that can help you? Because I know I talk to a lot of women and they say they go to a doctor and you know they'll take care of one particular thing, but they really aren't able to take care of all of the different things that are going on.
Well, there are people who are more focused in women's health in the more, you know, menopause years. So people who are focusing more on menopausal symptoms and who are taking care of women who are in their, you know, late 30s or 40s, basically beyond the obstetrician, because the obstetricians are primarily dealing with the issues related to baby make, you know, catching the babies. Mm-hmm. And so their offices tend to be, you know, chaotic. Somebody goes into labor, they got to dash out, et cetera. They do wonderful things for people, but it's hard to have somebody dedicated to the time it takes to kind of flush all these symptoms out. Some internists can be very good if they stay current in menopausal symptoms, if they're not too busy to have time to help. But the main thing is to find someone who does address menopause as an issue. And many of the things that do come up are all under this umbrella, and it becomes very possible to get help. You know, you can educate yourself too. Like my menopause magazine has this kind of stuff, and what I'd like to do for your listeners is I'd like to offer them a free subscription to the magazine. They can actually get a full year subscription by going to freemenopausehelp.com. And they can get a one-year subscription to the magazine. These are issues that get talked about all the time. It's digital. It's for the Android, you know, for the Google Play or in the Apple newsstand. It's for mm-hmm. the iPad or the iPhone. But they can get this kind of stuff as the basic information. And educate yourself. find out, read about it. Unfortunately, more and more we have to do our self-education to know what to ask for.
Well, that's very generous. Thank you for offering that. You know, as you're talking, I'm wondering, because I think about conversations I have with women, and I'm wondering if women maybe don't want to talk about some of the things they're going through, so maybe they're not giving their doctors all the information, or they think they're unrelated, so they don't realize how all the pieces come together.
Well, that's partially true. I mean, part of the story is this. First of all, you know, the appointments are pretty much under, everybody's trying to get a positive rating by being on time, you know, so that's all well and good. But what happens is, you know, you've got your 8 minutes in there, or your 12 minutes, or however long it is, it's your annual exam. You waited a whole year. You know, come in with all your questions ahead of time. Write down what you want, because in the moment of it all, when you're sitting there and you're Johnny, it's hard to remember all these questions. Mm-hmm. So part of it is to have enough time, have enough presence to have all your questions ready and get those questions out. And if you can't get your questions answered in the time you're allotted, make another appointment to come back to address your questions. Very important. The other part of the story, though, is embarrassment. For instance, bladder problems, huge problem. Half the women in the country have bladder problems. Now, this may be something that's occasional, like, you know, I just got to go real often. And you know women that you go to the mall, they know every bathroom along the road to the mall, from the mall, and at the mall. And the thing is, they need to realize that this is not necessarily a normal situation. They can deal with it. But you also know women who are going and they're trying to play tennis, or they're doing their aerobics exercise, or their yoga, and the next thing you know, they cough, they sneeze, they bounce on the floor, and they lose urine. The average woman is waiting 5 to 7 years to ask her doctor about this problem because she's embarrassed. So this is important to get over it. Talk about these things and get help. There's so many things, for instance, with that problem that you can do. Or, for instance, there may be issues of loss of libido, lack of intimacy, you know, a discomfort, vaginal pain, and our vaginal dryness. And those are also one of the most common symptoms. And yet women are kind of awkward talking about it. They're afraid there's nothing can be done about it. Their libido is low, and they think their doctor will be embarrassed to ask them about it, or they don't have anything that can be done about it. All of that is wrong. Ask about these things. Go in with a list. Put your most pressing things first and ask. It's really important, and you'll be amazed how much more information you get if you ask. It's not going to come from the doctor a lot of times because they're busy, and if you're not asking, there's no problem, right? Chit-chat.
Right.
So just make it known, and a lot can be done.
Well, I love the fact that you're really encouraging women to have that conversation. We need to take another quick break. And when we come back, I want to really get into how diet and nutrition can affect menopause and women going through those changes. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who's tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head into the world and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect, ideal clients to your door every day and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, and I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching their own course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot at www.createyouronlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createyouronlinecourse.com.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Dr. Seibel, and we're talking about menopause and how women really need to take control. Ask questions. There's a lot of resources and a lot of help out there, but we've got to start having the conversation. And I'd like to talk just a little bit, Dr. Seibel, about how a woman's diet can affect menopause and its symptoms. Is it possible to help manage those symptoms through diet?
Well, of course, everything can be helped through diet, and menopause symptoms are one of the things that can be helped. First of all, pretty much eating a healthy diet is going to be helpful for menopause. So that means eating more whole foods as opposed to packaged or processed foods. But in particular, you want to avoid certain things. If you're trying to eliminate the symptoms like hot flashes and so forth, or bladder symptoms we were talking about, then you want to try and avoid spicy foods. The less spice in the food, the less hot flashes you get. It's also less irritating to your bladder. Also, trying to avoid like caffeinated things, sodas, that also is better. Wine is one of those controversial things. Wine, a glass of wine, up to one glass a day, can be good for your heart. But wine can be also irritating for the bladder. It can also trigger hot flashes. So these are some of the things to avoid doing. On the other hand, foods that have things like isoflavones in them. These are substances that are found in soy in particular. I know there's a lot of pluses and minuses out about soy. I actually wrote a whole book called The Soy Solution for Menopause. I happen to think soy is a wonderful food for menopause. It has these phytoestrogens, which are weak estrogens. They can help have a benefit on hot flashes. It can help on lowering your lipids and your cholesterol profile. It can help in blood pressure. It does a lot of positive things. Flaxseed is another food that can be very helpful. Flaxseed has to be, it's kind of like soy, it's kind of like sesame seeds a little bit, but it's a darker and nutty taste. But they have to be ground up. You can't just eat the flaxseed. They have to be ground or else they just pass through undigested. But if they do, sometimes people will get a little bit of help by taking a tablespoon or two of flaxseed and putting it, for instance, in their cereal and getting a little bit of a phytoestrogen that way. So these are things that are simple things that can be done that can be very helpful in terms of turning down the heat. As a matter of fact, a long time ago when I did my book, The Soy Solution, I wrote this little poem called Ode to Soy, and it went, drenched with sweat, I wake again, because I'm afraid of estrogen. Can't recall how long it's been since I could sleep the night. Trying soy could do no harm. It stopped the heat, though I'm still warm. Now I feel my life is charmed, because I can sleep the night. Experts say it's not the same as estrogen, they all complain. But it sure helped turn down the flame, and I can sleep the night. So the thing is that none of these things that are alternatives, our foods, are going to take away the symptoms, but they can lower the two variables, intensity and frequency, so that it can be a little bit more tolerable. And sometimes that's the difference between getting a good night's sleep and not.
I haven't, I like the way you said that, lower the intensity and the frequency.
Well, that's how hot flashes are measured, because they're how often do they come and how hot are they? So it's like, think of from the science of a wave science, you know, it's like intensity and frequency is the variable. So I just use that to address hot flashes.
Mm-hmm. And I know if people think they have hot flashes, but when or they wonder if they're having hot flashes, and what I can say is, when you've had one, you will know you've had it.
Well, may I say a word about hot flashes and how
absolutely.
Let me tell you about a recent study that every woman should know about, and that is when it came out about September 2014 in the journal Menopause, and it was a study in which they looked at 500,000 women with hot flashes. These were Fortune 500 women that worked at Fortune 500 companies. They knew their insurance. They knew they had the diagnosis of hot flashes. 500,000, and of those, 250,000 women were treated for their hot flashes, and 250,000 were not treated for their hot flashes. The 250,000 women who were not treated for their hot flashes over the next 12 months had a total of 1.5 million more doctor's visits than the women whose hot flashes were treated. That turned into about $400 million worth of office visits. But not only that, it's the embarrassment of having the hot flashes, it's the loss of focus at work, the feeling not quite as good as you could in your mindset, etc. And so if you extrapolate that to the general population of the 9 million women in America who have untreated hot flashes that are moderate to severe, the cost of hot flashes to the workplace is $14 billion to the workplace. Now, women need to realize they not only have a right, they have a mandate to treat these hot flashes. This is just hot flashes, right? Quote, just hot flashes. Look what it's doing. So I encourage you to not tolerate these symptoms and to get treated, because it's going to improve your quality of your life and the quality of your work, and that's going to make you feel better about yourself.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's always good when you've got when you've got more information about what's going on. It certainly makes a difference.
You don't have to tough it out. You should, and for the reasons I just gave, if for no others.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you find that there are different nutritional needs for women who are entering middle age than is it different for women when they're going through menopause than it is for men as it age? Is it men or women? Do you have any insights into that?
Well, I think that as one gets into middle age, I mean, women, the things that I think are really important for women in particular in terms of supplements and things of that kind, I think that women need to really be monitoring their vitamin D, 25-hydroxy vitamin D. Every week I find women whose vitamin D levels are low. Now, I live in the Boston area. It's in the Northeast. But I also see patients who are snowbirds and come back. And I see people from all over. So I think that people need to have a blood test and check it, because low vitamin D levels can affect not only your bone health, which is very important. Vitamin D, of course, helps calcium get into bones. But also there's been some studies that suggest that low vitamin D may be impacts the risk of heart disease. It may put women at slightly more risk of breast cancer. It affects muscle strength. It can affect mood. It can affect the thinness of your hair. It does. It's a hormone. And it can do a lot of things. So I think making sure you get plenty of vitamin D is very important. And I think that making sure that women get enough calcium in their diet, and if they don't, to take supplemental calcium, but to really understand how much calcium you're getting, because hip fracture is a big deal. And right now, if you're a 50-year-old healthy woman and you are probably worried about your mammograms and you're probably worried about, you know, making sure that you get tested, you are just as likely to die from a hip fracture as a healthy 50-year-old, as you are from breast cancer. And so the issue is not everybody is taking advantage of getting their bone density tested and making sure they get plenty of calcium and vitamin D. So these are things that are really simple and very important to do that I think are particularly important. And then, you know, other things that I think, I mean, my own personal bias, and these are my opinions, but I think that a multivitamin is a good thing. I think that fish oil is something that women should be considering as a possibility to take. And, you know, I think, you know, the vitamin D and the calcium, I think those are important basics. And then everybody can talk to their internist or their doctors and see what works best for them. But those are just my opinions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with getting vitamin D tested. I mean, I live in Arizona, and you'd think I get plenty of sun, but I still have to watch my vitamin D levels because they've been, you know, lower from time to time. So I think mm-hmm. it's really important to have those baseline numbers and really have those conversations with your doctor. I had no idea about the hip fracture versus the breast cancer. I guess I need to go get my bone density test done. Some of those things I keep. I get the mammogram and do those, but the bone density one I have put off. So I guess I'm going to have to move that up on my to-do list.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important. And then you know where it is. And then in another couple of years after that, you want to check it again because it takes two dots to make a line. And then you can know if it's getting holding on its own or it's dropping. And that'll mm-hmm. let you know the degree of which you need to have concern or not. It's just
so two other items I'd like to ask you about. So we've talked about vitamin D and we've talked about calcium. What about iron and fiber? How does that affect women in menopause?
Well, iron is one thing that women in menopause really don't need much of because the whole thing is that during the menstruating years, of course, blood is lost from the menstrual cycle. And while it may seem like a lot of blood, it isn't that much blood. But and also there's pregnancies that are going on and so forth where iron is lost. But in menopause, there is not a period going on anymore, and there's not pregnancies, so there's not as much loss of iron. So people need to check their iron levels, but they generally don't need to take supplements of iron. And certainly the food they eat that has iron in it, whether it's meat or it's spinach or wherever they get their sources, should be sufficient. Fiber, of course, is a very important thing because fiber can help to keep bowels regular and also cut down the risk of colon cancer. So fiber is a very good thing to be eating. And for many women, bowels get a lot more sluggish. Fiber is also helpful in controlling cholesterol. So all of those things are good things to be eating. I mean, the most important thing, and too, is trying to control your weight because the weight puts you at risk for things like metabolic syndrome, which is a condition where the cholesterol gets out of whack, the waistline gets bigger, the blood pressure goes up, the fasting insulin goes up, and it puts you at risk for heart disease and diabetes, and those are things you want to avoid. So, but in general, not much iron, and fiber is great.
Great. Well, thank you. And we're going to take our final break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about how women see weight increase and some of the things that you just talked about, because I know that there's a lot of questions about that. So again, we're going to take our final break. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley. And today we're talking with Dr. Seibel, and we're talking about menopause and the changes women go through. We had a great conversation before the break about foods that you should eat, things that you should maybe not eat as much of, and how they impact your body. And I know that I sure learned a few things, and I'm sure that anyone who's listening also learned. I want to, before the break, you mentioned, Dr. Seibel, about gaining weight and some of the physical changes that women go through. Does going through menopause mean that you're going to gain weight, or is that have to do with the eating choices? Do they people eat differently? Do you have any idea, or can you shed some light on what goes on?
Well, going through menopause primarily means it's going to be harder and more challenging to maintain weight. But it doesn't mean that one will absolutely have to gain weight. And when you talk about weight gain, there's nothing more complicated to talk about because it affects so many parts of a person's life. It's how they feel about themselves, and it's, you know, whether they're in a sedentary job or an active job, or whether or not they have depression, or it matters if they are eating poor food choices or if they're incorporating exercise into their life, and a whole host of other things. To kind of just draw some general statements about it, let me just say just a few kind of general comments. The big thing that I see all the time is women come in and they feel there's kind of like this little creeping waistline that's kind of just slowly inching its way out and eventually getting out of their reach or control. And this is a very important thing because ultimately it affects the way that you feel about yourself because, you know, you have to move to the next size dress and then you have to feel as though you're not as attractive. You're shopping in different size areas of the store, and all of these have a major impact. There's a couple of things that I think are important to understand. First of all, weight control has a lot to do with food choices, and trying to have portion control is very important. And I think that this is just a whole discussion on its own about just putting the food on your plate that you want to eat, not having the food that you serve on the table, make it further away from the table, making the food choices that you incorporate healthier ones, try to put more vegetables into each meal, try to have fewer carbs, trying to minimize the amount of bread. All of those things are going to be very simple. Avoiding sodas at all costs, even diet sodas, are not free of a problem because the artificial sugars trick your pancreas into thinking that it is actually sweeter than sugar and actually secretes more insulin, which then puts fat into your belly. So those are, that's one set of things. The second thing is to try and have healthy choices in the house. In other words, try and have vegetables even more than fruits because they have less sugar in them, and try to eat more vegetables on a regular basis, maybe carrot sticks, maybe broccoli sticks, maybe a little bit of hummus or some small low-caloric kind of thing to go on it. Try to eat more regularly throughout the day, like 4 or 5 meals that are smaller instead of the bigger meals. Try and eliminate that bigger meal at nighttime, and especially not late at nighttime. Considering the impact of estrogen in this decision making. You don't think about estrogen. A lot of women think estrogen increases their weight. But in fact, estrogen actually causes insulin to be more effective at putting sugar into the muscles. And that is going to be helpful in terms of gaining weight and muscles, working on your muscles, because muscles burn more calories, 3 times the calories that fat does. So the more muscles you have, the more calories you're going to burn at resting. So that's very important. And also your choice of estrogen. The patches, the things that go on the skin actually are more efficient at utilizing insulin and getting fat put away, calories put away, than the oral estrogen. So there's a slight benefit to having a topical of some kind for the estrogen. Making sure you exercise is part of every day. It's got to be habits. People have to make habits that they can live with. So incorporating healthy habits includes physical activity, even if it's 10 minutes. If you're on the phone, don't sit there at the phone. Stand up and talk on the phone. If you go shopping, don't put your car right at the door of the place. Go and park across the mall so that you can walk a little bit and get some exercise. Walk down the escalators instead of taking the escalators everywhere. Everything you do that can, at work, have a walking meeting. Go with your person you have to have a meeting with and go for a walk instead of just sitting there having the same conversation. All of these are things that you can incorporate to help control weight.
I love all the things that you shared, and I know one of the things that I do when we go shopping is I try to find a parking place that's quite a ways away from the door, because then it gets me out and gets me walking. And I actually recently started, I got one of those Fitbits, and I thought I was actually, I mean, I work at a desk, so I'm sitting quite a bit, but I still thought I was getting up and doing a lot of walking, but I was amazed at how I wasn't doing as much as I thought I was until I really started paying attention to it.
Right.
And it helped, really helped me shift what I was doing.
Well, you know, you want to try and get about 10,000 steps every day. And if you look at your Fitbit, I will bet that there are days when you get less than 10,000. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to say, before you decide to call it a day, maybe you want to go for a walk around the block then. And at least you are quantifying in your mind's eye what you are, what your ideal needs would be, and then you can turn it into objective. And you don't have to have a Fitbit. You can just get a pedometer, you know. But some form of measurement is very helpful because it objectifies it as opposed to just saying, yeah, I walked today. I'm sure it's good. And sometimes it is, sometimes it's surprisingly not.
It does. It really helps me be much more aware of it. So at the end of the day, when I'm ready to sit down, it's like, okay, I need to walk to the mailbox. I need to do a few more things to get some extra steps in.
That's great that you're doing that.
And I really like the way you were talking about estrogen, because I know there's been, I've heard a lot about it, and, you know, people say, take it, don't take it. It, you know, it's good, it's bad. There's so much information out there. So
there's so much that's new and important. And if you would like another time, we can talk and focus more on the estrogen story, because that in itself is a very interesting topic for women to be mindful of, because it's, the data has changed totally in the last 18 months.
That's really interesting, and that's good for people to know, so to make sure that you don't, because I think we tend to sometimes learn information, and we don't always stay current on the changes and the things that are going on.
Right, and, you know, there's, it's important that women have that basic information. I talk a little bit about it in an ebook that I did called Changes During the Change, What to Expect and What to Do About Them, which women can get that by going to freemenopauseebook.com, freemenopauseebook.com, and then get a little bit of that. But the estrogen story is one that women should be aware of, because what we now know is that estrogen taken at the right time can actually lower the risk of breast cancer, dementia, and heart attack, and at the wrong time can actually increase the risk of breast cancer, dementia, and heart attack. And that has to all be teased out, and women have to understand that much more clearly in the past than in the past, because the data is now very different.
Very interesting. And I know today during our conversation, you shared so much information with us. And you talked about your magazine. You talked about a couple of great ebooks. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you or to learn more about what you do?
Well, they can go on the web to mymenopausemag.com. I have a website that has lots of free information there. So mymenopausemag.com has a lot of basic information, videos I've done, and other kinds of information. As I mentioned, they can go to freemenopausehelp.com, and I've offered a year subscription to My Menopause Magazine, which I'm delighted for people to take advantage of. Or they can take the quiz that I told them about, find out if they're in perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause by going to freemenopausequiz.com and try and educate and learn as much as you can, because that's going to be the best way that you can stay well instead of get well.
Well, thank you for that. And we will put a link on our website at eatgreatlivewellradio.com so that people will be able to also get in touch with you.
Awesome.
And I'd like to end our conversation by asking our guests, what's one thing that they can do that will help them if they're experiencing menopause or they're having some of the symptoms? What's one thing that they can do to help make that a little bit easier?
I think the main thing is to recognize what the symptoms are, really take a look and be thoughtful about what it is that's most taxing, most troublesome to you at this point in time. Write that down and then make time to go in and talk with your doctor to really address that problem so that you're getting the best treatment possible and alleviating the symptoms. And if something is embarrassing or something is uncomfortable, you have to just accept that it's okay to feel embarrassed or uncomfortable. Ask your questions and then get the relief that you want, because you don't have to suffer with most of these symptoms. There's things that can be done.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for your time, Dr. Seibel.
That's absolutely my pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation, and there's going to be some more conversations that I know we can have, so thank you very much.
Again, my pleasure.
So until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourself and your family. Be sure to join me each week so we can continue the conversation on how to build a healthier relationship with food and with yourself. And again, I invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and be part of our conversation. Click on Facebook and share your thoughts. Let us know what you'd like to learn more about. And be sure to share today's conversation with someone you know who can benefit from it. Have a great and healthy week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.